Journalists confront any number of obstacles and conflict zones, threats to their own safety, the inability to report freely, a firewall of propaganda. And now with reporters' increased reliance on new technology comes a new hazard, mortal danger to themselves and their sources due to weak or non-existent digital security measures. Journalist Matthew Akins wrote about the problem for the May issue of the Columbia Journalism Review, and he included some chilling case studies, including the story of British filmmaker Sean McAllister and a Syrian dissident source who went by the online name of Kardok.
Kardok was very eager to get the word out about the dissidents in Syria, so he was willing to work with Sean, but he became very worried because of surveillance by the Syrian government, and he wasn't sure that Sean was following the kind of safety precautions that he and his fellow activists felt were necessary in these situations. He said that Sean was using unencrypted emails and calling him on the phone and sending mobile text and generally just not behaving in a way that someone who may be the subject of intense electronic surveillance needs to behave.
And sure enough, Sean was arrested and Kardok fled the country immediately.
He didn't hesitate. He just packed his bag, turned off his phone and fled and eventually ended up across the border in Lebanon where he's living underground now. A number of other sources either fled or were arrested. So they were obviously compromised because the Syrians were able to get the information on Sean's computer and phone because they weren't properly encrypted. Reporters are sort of a one-stop shop for information for spies, right? We're doing all the hard work, contacting dissidents, investigating stories, and they can access all that just by getting into our computers or email addresses where we're storing most of this information these days.
How much are these countries able to do in penetrating a reporter's work?
Western companies and Chinese companies and other companies have been selling this kind of repressive technology to all these different governments. Nokia or Amesis, which is a French company, there's Blue Code. There's really no restrictions on this sort of thing right now, so it's been a free-for-all. It's very powerful surveillance technology, and it'll allow you to monitor all the email and phone conversations that are taking place within a country. It's really incredible how easy it's gotten for governments to be able to do this stuff. And of course, the U.S. government can do that too, but there are legal protections, and those technologies, when they're used in a place like Bahrain or Syria, are used to target anyone indiscriminately.
You also discovered some pretty chilling information about the extent to which reporters were exposed in Libya. You describe a guy named Marwan Arabi, who was in charge of information technology at Libya's Ministry of Foreign Affairs.
Marwan told me about how, among many other news organizations, they'd accessed a CNN journalist's email account and actually downloaded a source list with phone numbers and names of people who were secretly in contact with CNN inside Tripoli during the war. Arabi was secretly in contact with the Libyan opposition, and so he tried to warn some of the people on this list.
Describe the Trojan horse virus.
Well, a Trojan horse virus gets accepted onto your computer in the guise of something else. So someone sends you a video. Hey, look at this video of human rights abuses by Gaddafi forces. And when you click on it, it actually installs a file on your computer that allows people to access and do whatever they want to you, basically. Once you control someone else's email account, then it becomes much easier to hack into their friends because you can pretend to be that person and they'll be more likely to trust a file that you send them.
And yet, Arabi told you that it isn't that this stuff is so complicated.
I mean, this is stuff that a 14-year-old kid can do. I mean, there's a lot that you can do to protect yourself. Encrypt your drive, which basically means that all the data is in a code that only someone who has a password can read.
And you don't use passwords like 12345?
Which is what half of the Syrian government officials who are hacked were apparently using. Using long and complex passwords, being careful about what you click on and download, these are all important basic steps that people can take to secure themselves.
Every reporter understands the need to protect their sources. That's not something you have to drive home.
Well, I think it's kind of a generational thing. Technology has crept up so fast that now you're asking a lot of experienced, established reporters to stop their workflow and learn a whole new language. Right now, there's really not much in the way of comprehensive programs to teach people digital security anywhere, whether it's at news organizations or at journalism schools.
It seems like a problem so fundamental, they should have begun to address it before now.
probably in 10 years we'll look back and think, wow, it was crazy. We were walking around with our whole digital lives hanging out there exposed, and we didn't take basic precautions. And the sooner people wake up, the better, because I'll tell you, hackers and spies have already woken up to it. And right now, it's a feeding frenzy for them. It's all out there, and they are loving it.
Matthew, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Matthew Akins is a freelance journalist. His piece, The Spy Who Came In From the Code, can be seen in the May issue of the Columbia Journalism Review.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.